Hey yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. I am the Crown Prince of Charisma, the futurist, Mo. Kind of handy, actually, because we may just have the future of music on with us here today. Elin Rubin is joining us today. He's back. He was on earlier when he was releasing his Heart, Mind, Body, and Soul as EPs. The Heart at the time was out, and the rest of the album is now fully available. He's back to join us. Last time you had, unfortunately, Elin, you were talking to Brett. This time, luckily for you, you got me.
That's why I felt luckier on the phone.
That would do it. That would do it. But enough talking about me talking about Brett. What do you think about Brett? No, I'm just. Brett is he's going to be editing this. He'll probably edit all this out anyway. So the new regime, Heart, Mind, Body, and Soul. It's I listened to it yesterday 3 times. I listened to your entire discography twice. Gave that one, of course, a little extra attention. I was sitting here. I was doing some creative work. I was working on a graphic novel doing some writing. And I found that listening to your music fostered my own creativity greatly. And I think that is a very big kind of, I think that's a big feature of what you're doing and the type of music you're doing is how much the creativity feels like it's flowing from your music and it goes out into the world.
Awesome. Maybe we should print that on the next round of vinyl.
No charge.
That's good. Well, I have to say, I'm impressed with how much you listened to yesterday. That's phenomenal. And I'm glad you found it entertaining enough to listen to so many times. So thank you very much.
I found it for myself very, useful. It was stimulating me creatively. That's not really even the right word, but your creative process.
Creatively.
That's it. Yeah. Thank you kindly. It's not like I talk out here for, for a living or anything. But anyways, creatively, as you're going through it, do you, because these are very complex arrangements. Do you kind of see the entire song, hear the entire song in your head beforehand, or is it more of a work in progress as you're going through it?
It's become more of a work in progress. I tend to write from either the guitar or the piano, typically, but I do, from time to time, just experiment while recording, and that will eventually flesh itself out into an entire song. Now, it's funny that you say that the arrangements are pretty complex because honestly, not that I have any sort of formula or adhere to any sort of set structure, but I do find the songs to overall fit within a more typical structure. What I don't like to do is kind of have anything that sounds like a rehash of anything else, whether it's my own music that has already come out or anybody else's music who I listen to. So I really try to have that spark of creativity sustain itself from the onset to the completion of the music. And hopefully that's what you're picking up on. But, in terms of arrangements, occasionally I'll come up with something where I go, you know what, I'm not going to sit here and think about verse, pre-chorus, chorus, bridge, whatever sort of, structure that most songs adhere to. And I'm just going to go for it. And Sweet Kind of Suffering is something that fits that criteria. There's another song on my previous release, Exhibit B, called Voices Calling, where it's the same thing. I just kind of went off and followed the song until it was complete. And there's songs that I'm very proud of, but the vast majority, I'd say, are more common in terms of structure. But it's the melody and the harmony and all the layers and textures that go into it where I really try to distance myself from everything else.
It's actually interesting you mentioned that. Maybe that's why I picked up on it that way, is that Sweet Kind of Suffering is my favorite track. I think I listened to that one.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, I listened to that one about a half dozen times. Just kept going back to it because it's, and I think that's probably, it made such an impression on me that way. I think that's probably part of what I was picking up there.
No, well, it's one of my favorites. I mean, I love the groove. I love the tone that's set with that very mechanical organ sequence. And I love it all. I love the lyrics. I love the groove to it. The sonic textures, it takes you places, and I like that. Now, I will say that if I wrote 15 more of those, I think it's something that would become very boring. So I really like that song is kind of a crown jewel to the album in that sense, that it really sets itself apart from the rest.
It really does, you know, and I'm very much a lyric guy. I mean, that's really what, for me, it's the lyrics that has to be connect for me more than the music even. And the lyrics of that one are the message, and I just find it very, you know, it's just a very interesting listen. From your perspective, can you kind of explain the concept of the song a little more?
The concept of Sweet Kind of Suffering?
Yes, please.
I got to think about this, because lyrically, whenever I'm coming up with something, it can either start from an idea that's kind of just been present in the back of my mind, or it could be words that I'm mumbling that actually happen to make sense. And I have to sit there and dig a little deeper and think, okay, what am I actually talking about, and where is this coming from? But I suppose that the lyrics to that one really center around finding yourself to be more of an isolated individual. And of course I'm talking about myself in this one. And, you know, that doesn't mean that I'm an antisocial being, but I am definitely an introvert. You know, I like to spend time by myself and working on things myself. And that from time to time can be a little depressing. It could be lonely. It could be whatever it is, but no matter what, I find myself in those sorts of settings. But, you know, a lot of great things come from that, and that's where the term Sweet Kind of Suffering comes from, because it's something that you can't really help, nor do you want to help, but both sides of that, being the negative and the positive, do yield a positive result. And that's pretty much what that's about.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, as I say. That's a very similar personality to myself there. So I think that's probably another reason why that one really connects to me. Reminds me of one of my favorite songs. Please go ahead.
I got to find like another million of you. That'd be great. Another million of you. That would be fantastic.
Well, again, I have one of my favorite songs. It says, "It feels good feeling so bad," you know, and I always got that, you know, and I don't know that everybody does, but I think this song speaks along those same lines. Do you consider yourself a kind of a perfectionist in the studio?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Now, perfection in itself is also subjective, because, you know, I don't necessarily care for things to be dead on the grid when they're recorded, or things to be in complete perfect tune. But the level of perfection is really executing what it is that I'm hearing in my head. You know, not everything is meant to be perfect. And I think a lot of music, most music, if not all of it today, that's at least out commercially and popular, has lost a lot of that that soul, that sort of magic, whether it be the lack of gentle slowing down and speeding up from section to section that kind of provides this level of energy that you're not really aware of, or a sort of rawness that really helps get the vision across even greater. Now, I'm not saying that I'm advocating for shitty garage rock that sounds terrible and isn't in key, but a lot of the greatest stuff has that slight roughing of the edge that gives the listener something a little special. You know, you may get sick of a melody after a while, you may get sick of a chord progression or a harmony, but it's the performance that never gets old for me personally, you know. So I try to, that's my view of perfection. You know, there are moments where I want things to be dead on and precise, and there are times where I want things to feel a little looser. And when I accomplish either of those, that's what I find to be perfection.
So it's really more like you're trying to capture the emotion of what you want to convey more than the perfection in the music.
Yeah, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to sit there and put mistakes on the album or key vocals, but, you know, there's a lot more that I have to think about, because I'm not a 3-4-5-piece band. So if I want something to have a particular groove or a feel, I have to think about it as each perspective of the drummer, bass player, guitar player, singer, so on and so forth. So a lot of thought has to go into something that maybe much simpler if it were a great band, for example, because bands form their ways of playing amongst themselves with time. And I love doing everything by myself, but at the same time, I'm able to analyze and appreciate what it is I love about other bands, and I'm able to sort of approach things in the same way that yield a result that I'm content with.
Yeah, I suppose it's impossible when you're just creating the music yourself to we've seen those bands where the chemistry makes them better than the individual, and you can't really replicate
that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but
exactly.
So when do you know then, if the way you're doing it, then how do you know when a song is right, when it's done, when it's ready to go on the album, or are they never quite right, but just deadlines get there?
I do genuinely feel that something isn't finished until it's released, which is a horrible way to look at it. You know, I wish I was able to let go of things a lot quicker. But really what happens with me is I have an idea in my head of how I want the final product to sound, and I will just keep embellishing and adding things to the tracks until I feel that level of completion. The problem is, though, is that I have to listen to the music hundreds more times than anybody in a band would. And once again, I'm not complaining about this, but most bands, they record their parts and then everybody else leaves while the other bandmate is doing their overdubs or their tracking. You know, I have to listen to it every single take of every single instrument, every single time until I'm happy with it. But what happens with that is every time I'm listening to something, some other idea may pop in or some other texture where by the end of it, you may end up with something that has so many layers that it's going to take you a lot of listens to really find them all, which can be fun. But I can see, or could have seen with past releases, where people could have potentially found things a little more dense than they would have liked. Although that's not the way I ever saw the music. But you see what I'm saying. You have so many layers that I'm only constantly getting these ideas because I've heard the music an absurd amount of times. Where somebody listening to it the first time, it's a completely different and fresh perspective. So it's odd to determine when something's done or not.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense though to me. As I'm listening to the songs, and I find these are songs that wash over you. I think that's the best way I would describe it as an album, and the flow of the album.
Uh-huh.
How did you kind of determine which songs would be on which EP and the overall track listing?
Well, I wrote and recorded all the songs plus an additional 4, so 20 in total. And there was a song called Heart, Mind, Body, and Soul, which is the single that will be coming out unless coronavirus takes down the airwaves.
Yes.
But that was one of the first songs I wrote for the album. But then that kind of lent itself to this idea of having the album be titled that and then splitting it up into 4 pieces, Heart, Mind, Body, and Soul. And what was cool about that is a lot of people seem to be releasing a lot more singles these days, which works extremely well if you're a big band and you have a rabid fan base who's waiting to tear apart anything you put out. But with a band or a newer project that still has statements that need to be made, and I'm speaking purely musically, one song doesn't feel like enough. Neither does 2, 3 is okay, but 4 felt like the right amount of music that you could dig into and have it last for a month or so before wanting the next batch of music. So knowing that everything was going to be distributed in chunks, I first thought about what would work lyrically for each EP, obviously going along with the title, and what would also work musically. So I didn't write with the intention of these are 4 songs that are going to be under the Heart EP and so on and so forth. But what was fun about that is I was then able to see kind of retrospectively these common threads that were laced throughout the music. So I put each group of 4 songs under the title that I thought best fit them, but then had a great time resequencing the entire 16 track to have sort of the optimal listening experience, because I personally love listening to albums. I will never skip around on something. I can't stand listening to music that way because I feel that sequences are important. And just as you were saying, the sum of individuals is greater than the individual in terms of bands, I often feel that way with music. You know, some of my favorite songs are my favorites because I love the way they precede one and or follow the other, you know. So I had a good time sort of resequencing everything for what would have been the best from top to bottom. And it's not easy to do with 16 songs, you know, especially when you're not looking at it in terms of two LPs or four sides per se. So it was a good challenge, but I really think it was the best way to go. You can digest things in smaller chunks if you'd like, or you can have a fairly lengthy listening session and hopefully be taken places.
And that's the experience I ended up having. And I mean, to be
excellent,
you know, and the thing is, it's what you're mentioning there, you know, kind of the sequencing of these albums. It is almost a lost art in this day and age. It is almost something that seems like it's become less important. So I'm glad that you're embracing it, because to me, in this day and age, when all the music is available through streaming services, and certainly that's how you promote it now, you don't say go out and buy the album. You say go to Spotify and listen to it. You know, that's typically how it's done. And to me, that means it's easier than ever to listen to entire albums. But it seems to have gone the opposite way for some reason.
Yeah, I really don't understand why. Or, you know, what I was just thinking about while you were saying that is, as you could have guessed, I'm an enormous Beatles fan, and I don't want to sound like a broken record referencing the Beatles for the millionth time. But, you know, looking at their history and their release schedule, it was amazing to me that they'd release about three singles and two LPs a year, pretty much. And these days, the singles are still found on the album, which I'm not saying isn't right. But what I do find odd is with bands releasing four or five singles, I mean, you have half the album out before the album's out. That I don't understand personally. You know, if you're going to have a single, why not have it be this thing that lives on its own? And of course, the answer is economic, because you use the single to drive the sales of the album. And I understand that, but I think it would also be cooler to see a little more one-off releases. That seems to be something that's kind of died out as well. But I would love to do more. And then you have an even more different way of releasing things, knowing that every album these days is going to see some sort of deluxe release with previously unreleased material, which is what I'm going to be doing. You know, those four songs that I completed that didn't make it on the album will be coming out. So yeah, everyone has their own way of doing it. But it is funny how these patterns sort of present themselves, and patterns from the past have kind of died off or mutated into what they are now. So that's all interesting, as long as people get the music, I suppose.
Yeah, as long as they get the music, that is the end game, obviously. So that's interesting. Yeah. You're mentioning the deluxe. What are you looking at doing that?
I'm not exactly sure, to be honest, just because the album came out a few days ago. But oddly enough, with vinyl having been so popular for, I don't know, last 9-10 years, maybe even more, and continually growing in popularity, the pressing times are something that have to factor into that, because it's not like a CD or an upload where you can have a finite amount of time or a very accurate estimate. You know, so these things can go out months and months and months, and I'm hoping that's not the case, but that's a very realistic concern in terms of when you make a release. So I'll be getting to the bottom of that sooner or later.
Well, you know, I mean, as you say, it just came out. I'm sure there's lots to do right now as is. Yeah. But I was just curious, because you mentioned, you know, four additional tracks. And so immediately I start thinking to myself, does that mean another resequencing of the songs in order to fit those in properly into the album? Or does that mean just four songs at the end tacked on? How are you thinking of approaching it?
I would see them as tacked on. I mean, personally, if I had a, let's say, an album that I've already listened to, and then I found it resequenced, I would feel odd about that. But obviously having more material is great. So I think just treating it as a bonus and putting it on afterwards is what I would be most content with. And that's what will happen.
So obviously you're proud of those songs as well. What was their reasoning for not being included originally?
Well, the sequencing, as we've discussed, is very intricate, or at least it can be. And considering I take it very seriously, there were songs that presented themselves as sort of, I don't want to say sore thumbs, because they obviously have their place, but if I had to whittle it down, because I wasn't about to put out a 20-song album, but I just felt like those are the ones that could have afforded to live with themselves or by themselves as amongst the other 16. And, you know, obviously it's a subjective thing, but I saw them as the writer, and, you know, something's got to get cut, but only for the time being, because they will be coming out, obviously.
Well, I'm glad. I'm sure these are your babies. I'm sure it's not easy to cut any of them.
Yeah, it's very difficult. And it took a lot of listening and a lot of experimenting with sequences, where it's like, just think about a scenario where you have 15 songs and I have to find that last one. And I'm then shuffling the remainder in between all these other songs, because you have ideas. You think, okay, I want to open the album this way, I don't want to close the album that way. Then you have 14 other songs in the middle that you have to sequence, but you want peaks and valleys. You don't want it to be an ongoing energetic album or an ongoing soft album or whatever it is. So you have to find places where these peaks and valleys work, and they don't work with every song. So aside from the bookends that were already predetermined, everything else in the middle was subject to change until there was a straight 16 tracks that worked well. But I'm happy to say I found a sequence I was happy with.
It's actually, I believe, is it 2015 that Exhibit B came out?
Shockingly, yeah. I mean, yeah, I have no idea how that much time has passed. I mean,
that
it feels
much time
like
has
a year
passed.
And a half at best.
Yeah, no, I was looking at that and I was wondering, you know, I mean, but 5 years is a long time. I imagine it's not that you weren't ever stopping creating songs for the new regime, or were you taking a true break, or was it just, how did it end up being 5 years? Do you even
never
know?
I mean, I couldn't tell you precisely, but a lot of touring happened between 2015 and the very beginning of 2017. That was a lot of playing. Then there were some Nine Inch Nails commitments in 2017. 2018, Nine Inch Nails toured a lot. And all that while, I was writing and recording Heart, Mind, Body, and Soul. And then I found myself in a negotiation with, at that time, Sony Red, now The Orchard, for releasing the album. And that took way longer than I would have liked. That was kind of frustrating, because at that time I had the entire album done, but I couldn't put it out because we were figuring out the deal. And then once you have a deal, the strategizing of the release and the rollout, the marketing and all that stuff takes time, which, like I said, is very frustrating for me. And then you find yourself in mid-2019 rehearsing for an Angels and Airwaves New Regime tour where I was doing double duty. And then before you know it, it's 2020. And here I am on a tour with Silver Sun Pickups. The album's been out for a week, and I already have 6 more songs written out for whatever's coming next. I will never be the type to just say, you know what, I need a break, I'm going to do nothing. I'd go nuts. Now, don't get me wrong, I'd love to be pushed to the brink of physical exhaustion to where I feel I need a break, but that would only end up with me sleeping a good night's sleep and then waking up and sitting down at the piano. You know, music's what I do. It's my work, it's my pleasure, it's my hobby, it's everything. So I wouldn't even know what a break would look like, to be honest with you.
It's that's interesting that, you know, I don't think we're going to see 5 more years before. I just have that feeling. I don't get that feeling that we're going to see 5 more years.
If it does, there will be a wrath for me that nobody saw coming. I just couldn't imagine it taking that long. But you know, any length of time in between releases is certainly not been by choice. I'll put it that way.
Well, so what are actually perhaps then some of the advantages of the fact that it's 5 years later? Perhaps some of the things that you've learned over the last few years in your experiences that have helped shape the way that you've approached this album?
Honestly, I wouldn't even know what to say because I couldn't tell you that there are experiences or certain things that had led to the songs that I wrote, with the exception of me just constantly evolving. I mean, from one album to the next, as I'm sure you took in yesterday, having listened to the discography, the most inspiring thing to me is where I left off and where I think I could and should go. You know, that feels like breaking new ground for me, and the exploratory process is always fun. When I have a batch of songs that's about an album's length, that's when I start sitting down and thinking, okay, it's time to record these. Is the idea fully fleshed out, or am I missing a certain type of song that's going to round out this release? And that's the way it works, you know, but I can't say, hey, I was hiking in the hills of who knows where and I got this song idea out of nowhere, you know.
Yeah,
that's not really my style. But once a project has reached completion and I sort of get to forget about those songs, that's what I find most refreshing and inspiring. Now, I mean that from the creative process. Obviously, I'm on tour right now and I'm playing those very songs, but I don't have to think about how to better them or how to improve them in any way, mix-wise, writing-wise, parts-wise. Those songs, for all intents and purposes, are done. And my mental hard drive has kind of moved all those files to the trash, and I'm opening new projects. So that's what I love most. And that's what just kind of excites me to write the next chapter.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I understand that. And it's actually interesting you're talking about the live experience. And what is the New Regime live experience like? As you know, obviously you've created these songs, and it's essentially one man show. How do you replicate the album sound properly? And do you replicate it, or do you allow it to be its own thing?
I allow it to be its own thing. I mean, I try to bring it as close as I can to the recordings without it being fake. And I definitely want the energy to be something else live. A lot of people have told me that the music comes off more aggressively and more energetic live, which I think is great. That's the point. You're playing in front of people, and there's obviously a buzz amongst the audience and in the room, and that gets to work itself out through the music. But since the tours I mentioned following Exhibit B, the New Regime has been a three-piece band. So I play guitar and sing vocals, obviously. Then I have a bass player who also sings and a drummer who also sings. Now, the lineups have mutated over time because commitments have been very hard in terms of scheduling and everybody having their own lives. But that's the way it's been. The piano hasn't seen the light of day too often most recently, but with some headline shows under the belt or just enough of a set time to really warrant that sort of equipment on stage, I would love for that to be more present because I think it's a very integral part of the New Regime music, especially on album. But the sort of power trio thing is a cool perspective for this music. And I think it works out surprisingly well.
And I saw some of the yesterday when I was going through everything, you know, some live performances from you. And I think it does come off very well. As you're picking the musicians you're working with, and are you trying to, like, what is that process like for you? Is it trying to find the person? Is it based on talent? Is it based on their ability to replicate your sound or what you hear? Is it chemistry or is it everything? What kind of goes into trying to find the right people to work with?
Well, I suppose it's a bit of everything. I mean, they obviously need to be able to play the parts and they need to be able to sing because harmony, as you know, is a very important part of the New Regime sound. And as a three-piece, I was extremely lucky to find the drummer who I have now who has a range as high, if not higher, than mine, who's able to hit a lot of those harmonies, which has made my life a lot easier. And singing drummers are not easy to find, as you can imagine. So I have a power trio, everyone singing, and often in three-part harmony, which is great. So aside from being able to play the material, you know, there also has to be a bit of a presence. I don't want it to seem like three guys who are just focusing on executing material for a concert. You know, it has to have a liveliness to it, an energy to it. And that also comes through with personality, you know, on stage, off stage. Got to get along well. And really, those are the things, being able to execute, being able to perform well and feeling like it's natural, or getting to the point where it is natural, and just being able to get along with people. So there's nothing worse than being stuck on a tour with people you can't stand. And I'm sure the vast majority of musicians have or are going through that. And I'm very fortunate to have a good group of guys out with me, and it's been a lot of fun.
I also think when you're, you know, because you're not touring just by yourself, you're with other band, you know, that if a band is not getting along, that affects the other performance, I think, as well on a tour. You know, they can hear when people are arguing in the other room, and it's not conducive to what you want to convey for musically. But I don't understand why you don't just get Phil Collins to sing and drum for you then.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, didn't he retire, unfortunately?
Yeah, just make a call. Come on.
Okay, well, I can see how it would go. But, he's got, you know, he can sing extremely well and play well, so I'll give it a shot if Rob can't make it.
All right. You know, you can give me credit later for that. So, obviously, I'm sure you're answering this question regularly right now, because I mean, it seems over the last 48 hours, we've seen an incredible amount of cancellations due to the virus. And you're on tour. I think it's a fairly heavy, extensive tour. You're playing most nights until the end of March. I think May 5th, then you're at a music festival. You know, you have a little bit of a break after that, or not quite as heavy at this point in time.
Yeah.
So what is kind of the, you know, what is this like navigating this world right now where it seems like every sports league has shut down? You know, we hear about lots of big events and expos and different things shutting down. And it's almost a surreal time. I've never seen anything like it.
It's certainly surreal. It's very unfortunate, but I mean, it truly is the epitome of an unforeseen circumstance. So what can you do other than take the proper precautions? I mean, I'm going to play as long as the shows are playable, but I really wouldn't be surprised if everything gets canceled or postponed, you know, is a more accurate term. And it's unfortunate. I mean, even just today, I found out that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was canceled, and obviously being a part of Nine Inch Nails, it's really unfortunate. Or, like I said, postponed. So, you know, and that being in May, I really wouldn't doubt if anything else around that time of the year gets postponed. I mean, it's really tough. The thing I don't understand is how anybody can postpone to a certain date. Coachella, for example. I mean, let's hope that by October festivals are on and everyone's out and about, but I really don't see how you could do that, not really having a better understanding or containment of coronavirus, you know? So I just keep going as I'm going. And if the shows are canceled, then I go home and hole up in the studio. Except this time, I can also call it quarantine.
Hole up in the studio. Well, you know, I mean, obviously, live playing a live show is a great way to get the songs out there. And what kind of the set list? What is it made up of? How many of the songs from the new album are you performing?
The majority of the set is from Heart, Mind, Body, and Soul. I'd say everything with the exception of 2 to 3 songs that are off of the Exhibits albums. Now, I wish I could play stuff off of everything, but, you know, it's obviously wisest to play the latest material, especially when you're playing for audiences who haven't heard you before. I mean, we're out with Silverstone Pickups. It's been a surprisingly good pairing. I mean, I was enthusiastic about it to begin with, but from night one, the crowd was just fantastic. And, you know, our numbers at merch, selling shirts and music and all that good stuff, were super high. And we thought, okay, maybe that was a fluke. But night after night, everything is kind of just topped the night before, which is excellent for us, you know. So it would certainly be a shame if things get postponed, but hopefully we can make them up. In terms of the songs, let's see. Definitely doing Way to Feel Again. We're doing Heart, Mind, Body, and Soul, of course. We're doing You Can Be, Knocking Down Your Door. I know I'm missing some right now. Turning a Blind Eye, Struggle in My Bones, We're Definitely Didn't Say What You Will from Exhibit A, We Rise, We Fall. And that may be the set, but I could be forgetting one. I'm just not sure. I was surprised I rattled off most of it.
No, you did great.
Let's look down at the ground and figure out what we're doing next. But yeah, they weren't in order, I have to admit. But yeah.
No, you did great. you know, don't ask me to even spell my own name. So, and it's only Mo.
Yeah.
So, you know, what, you know, how do you decide the, obviously, I mean, it's fairly easy. I mean, the album's called Heart, Mind, Body, and Soul, and you have a song named that. It's a natural for that to be a single. But how is it kind of your assess what songs you would use for promotion?
How do I define which song I would use for a single?
Yeah.
Is that the question?
Yes.
It's a combination of something that you feel is really exciting. You get a feeling where you go, hey, maybe this song's special, and you play it for other people. And when they share that feeling, then that kind of reinforces the original feeling, but really nobody knows how to pick a single. Anybody who can tell you they can pick a single is full of shit. Because if everybody could, then every song ever put out would be a hit. And you just never know how it goes. So I'm actually excited for this radio campaign. This will be the first time that the new regime has had a radio campaign, and I'm hoping for the best with it. Everybody I've played the song to at radio has been very enthusiastic about it, which obviously makes me proud and excites me for the future, you know? But, unfortunately, you have to look at singles as what other people would find catchy. And I'm not saying that that's what you have to pursue as the writer when you're creating the song, but when you kind of take stock of what you have, you need that thing that kind of grips people and pulls them along for a ride for 3 minutes or so. And, you know, I hate the idea of editing down for time and things like that, but there's also an art to keeping things as concise as can be without sounding rushed. I mean, a lot of my favorite songs are not much longer than 2 minutes or 2 minutes long with that. And like I said, there's an art form to keeping things simple and great. And that's a challenge I've also taken upon myself more recently with writing. And I kind of go back and forth. I go, okay, I'm going to keep it as simple as I can. And then when I'm sick of doing that, I'm going to go off the rails and just start writing and see where it takes me. And that could end up being, you know, as we mentioned earlier, A Sweet Kind of Suffering or Voices Calling. You know, just as long as I'm creating, that's what feels good. But then, like I said, at the end of the day, I know Queen work that way, where they wouldn't write for singles, they'd write the album, and then in retrospect kind of pick out which ones were obvious candidates. So I suppose that's the way I do it as well. Yeah, you know, like I said, there's definitely no logic to it in terms of what's actually successful.
I don't think that actually any of the songs even get to 5 minutes, do they? I think probably 4.5 minutes or so is the longest on the album, if I remember correctly.
On this album?
Yes.
mean, that could be. I'm not really sure. But, they're definitely on the more concise side.
I think there was Do Right By Me, I think was, I mean, it seemed like it was just a little over 2 minutes, so... I mean, I think you have a nice balance, you know, a song length and everything on this. I think that's, you know, if that's something that you were working on, then I think you succeeded on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Yeah. And as you're going on stage, I'm kind of curious if there is, as you go out to perform, do you have any sort of rituals that you do before you perform live? And do you approach it differently when you're doing something like A New Regime as opposed to drumming for Angels and Airwaves or Nine Inch Nails or something like that?
Yeah, it's definitely different. I mean, when it's The New Regime, first and foremost, what I focus on is warming up my voice. And I'll kind of do it slowly throughout the day. Mm-hmm. But from about an hour to an hour and a half before the show. I kind of start softly warming up whilst having a drink or two. And then, lately I've been playing a bit of guitar in the dressing room before going on stage. But pretty much the quote-unquote ritual is more just from an hour before, just focusing on whatever it is that needs to be done. But I don't have any sort of weird OCD rituals that I need to adhere to, or else I can't go on stage. But they are different from band to band, or I should say different from being a front man or being a drummer. You know, if it's a drumming thing, then I will actually pull the drum pad out and just do some warm-ups, more stretching more so, because I'm very active when I play. So stretching is very important. But and it's very different. For example, the Angels and Airwaves run where New Regime was supporting, I was so warm from doing the New Regime set that I literally just took off my jacket and 15 minutes later went back on stage to play drums. So it's always different, but you kind of just find yourselves in these schedules that repeat themselves daily.
I've heard a few musicians say that the rest of the day is work. When you're on stage, that's when you're having fun. And the rest of the day, though, that's the job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Now, it's funny where something like Nine Inch Nails is, I don't see it as work. I mean, you're playing great music in front of large crowds of people. Travel is easy. You're staying in great places. I mean, it's fantastic. And it is what it is. But here at New Regime, I mean, you're trading shifts, driving the van and stopping places and selling your own merch and doing all these things. That's the entire day is a colossal pain in the ass, with the exception of playing, you know. But it's got to be done. So I do it.
Post show, what do you do to kind of calm down or to, do you get out into the crowd and you say you're selling your own merch? And also, I suppose people wanting pictures and that type of thing has probably changed as well in this environment that we're currently experiencing.
Honestly, no. I mean, I go to the merch booth after the show, or at least, 5-10 minutes after the show, and people are very lively and enjoying themselves. You know, I personally, seeing people, greeting people, having conversations with people, I just make sure I don't touch my face or anything. And the first thing I do when I'm done, being nice and, conversational, is I go straight to wash my hands. But people are enjoying themselves, you know. I mean, I could imagine it would be different from a, 1,500 capacity venue to an enormous festival with tens of thousands of people. But as far as people going to these shows, I mean, I really don't think you'd be able to tell if you didn't know.
Is it? I actually imagine that one of the things that actually is probably pretty damn cool about being a front man is the fact that it'd be much easier. You can really look out into the stage, from the stage into the audience, and see that person that you're connecting with, that person who's really getting the band, really getting the music, really getting, really enjoying themselves, and you're giving them that kind of that joy. Do individuals ever stick out like that, or is it always just kind of a crowd?
The individuals definitely stick out, and it's one of the things that fuels the energy from on stage, because as I said, most of the people that were playing for on this tour have no idea who the New Regime is or who I am. So when you see people enjoying something and it's their first representation of what you do, it's fantastic to see.
Sorry to interrupt. Alan's going to get to sound check. So if we get three more questions and wrap it up, that'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah, well, that's fine. Yes, we'll actually get right to the opportunity to wrap up here, because you've been very generous with the time. I've really enjoyed this conversation, Ellen. It's you're a fascinating guy, and as you can tell, I kind of like to look at it from the psychology, of the musicianship and what you're going through, and try and learn more than I think. Than what is obvious to people, and you're very open and forthcoming with your answers on this. So I really have enjoyed this conversation.
Likewise. Thank you very much. Thanks for taking the time.
So let's give you the opportunity to plug, what's coming up, where they can keep up with the latest news. Of course, the album is available everywhere, but please promote yourself a little bit here.
Yeah, well, the new regime can be found on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all the goods. As you said, the latest album, Heart, Mind, Body, and Soul, is on all streaming platforms. You can also go to the website for merch and all that good stuff, which is thenewregime.com. And then I have my own personal socials, which is just my name, Ilan Rubin, I-L-A-N-R-U-B-I-N. And you can find me in all the same places. So there you have it.
Thank you very much. I hope I have an opportunity to talk to you again. I'll even let Brett back into the conversation if he wants. What the hell? But I hope so, because there's a lot to talk about there still. I believe there's a lot to explore. You're a fascinating guy. Thank you so much for joining us. We Talk Music, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
To win through the drama sin, you know we cannot make any exceptions. Roll over you on the way to the top of the star. Can't hear your petty objections. I want your heart, mind, body, and soul. I want your heart, mind, body, and soul. Weapons are words.